Hey guys, welcome back to Table 40. It's Matt Holliday here with my wife Leslie, and today we're honored to have Donald and Mallory Brown on with us. Donald played in the NFL for 7 seasons. He was a 2009 first round draft pick by the Indianapolis Colts, played his college football at Connecticut, and Mallory works for PAO, Pro Athlete Outreach. We are also tied to PAO, but guys, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you guys joining us and excited to hear you guys' story and have a conversation.
Thanks for having us. This is, I heard so many awesome things, so honored and privileged to have a conversation with you guys.
It's funny. So we have a mutual friend named Jason, and he said, hey, have you had Mallory and Donald on the podcast yet? And I'm like, no, not yet. And he said, well, you need to have them on and you need them to tell you their story. And so I'm so fired up. I told him he couldn't give it away at all. And so it'll be new for me too. So let's go. What do we got?
A little messy. That's fine.
I like messy. I do better with messy.
Uh-huh. It's a lot of messy. I think Jason's probably saying you should probably get Mallory on because she'll really give you the full picture and also be a much more entertaining guest on your show. But we're happy to be here. So happy to share our story.
Go for it.
Yeah. So let's say, Mallory and I, we actually met in high school. So we met at the lunch table in high school, my sophomore year, Mallory's junior year. And kind of all the jocks sat together. That was the way it worked at our high school. And so I'm a super introvert, by the way. And so I would never really say anything to Mallory, but I was always like admired by her. She's beautiful. I'm like, you know, nice. She's, yeah, I just loved her from the get-go.
Although he was dating someone at the time. Yeah, so let's clarify.
Where did y'all go to high school? Let's make sure we get that.
Yeah, I went to Red Bank Catholic. So we're both from New Jersey on the East Coast. Yeah, so went to Red Bank Catholic High School, met there. And then, so we kind of ran in the same circle, just being in the athlete circle. And then kind of went our different ways when we were off to college. Mallory went to James Madison. I went to UConn. Kind of stayed in touch via instant messenger. Remember AIM back in the day?
Oh, yeah. is back in the day.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I'd always use kind of the fall sports as a thread of our conversation, just checking in. Hey, how are you doing? And then fast forward to end of 2008. I'm wrapping up my time in college. Mallory is living in Manhattan at the time because she's a year older than I am. So she's living in Manhattan at the time. And I just said, hey, you know, I'll be home for Thanksgiving break or, you know, towards the end of the season. I was like, let's connect. Are you around? So we saw a movie.
And to be very honest, to interject briefly, I had lived in New York and I was working in the financial sector, dating a lot of losers. And I remember Donald like messaged me like, hey, I'm home for Thanksgiving. You want to see a movie? I'm like, this guy. I'm like, we've got nothing in common. I'm like, I mean, and we had one, Donald left this small part out, but he had visited me in college briefly and there might've been an end goal, but nothing happened. So that was our only connection point up until the movie ask. And so the truth be told, whether or not he likes for me to admit this, but I have younger brothers and they're like, Donald Brown from you, he wants to go on a date with you. And I'm like, yeah, what are you talking about? And they're like, you got to go. And I'm like, and my mom was like, I don't want to hear another sad story about your dating life in New York City. Like, he seems like a good kid. Like, try it out. So that's what led us to our first date.
What was the movie? Do you remember?
I forget.
We don't even remember ours either. We went to a movie on a blind date as well, and we can't remember what the movie was.
It was a movie I had seen already. So I was like prematurely laughing. That's how awkward it was. Like, I was laughing before things had happened. And he's probably like, this girl's nuts. Anyway, we went out again and again.
He did. And then so fast forward to, was that March or whenever the draft is, was that April 2009.
Right.
I got drafted by the Colts. And so right around that time, so I ship off to Indianapolis shortly thereafter. And so Mallory ends up losing her job. She's in
private. We were dating. So we kind of started dating. Like we had a first date and then you got to the draft.
Yes.
So there was an awkward moment where he asked me to be his girlfriend after months of friends. The best line was his agent. He flies me out to Irvine, California, where he was training. And his agent, he would be like, oh, this is my friend Mallory. I'm like, this. And his agent, who I love, Cam, was like, do you treat all your friends this nicely? And so like that night, maybe a healthy conviction, he was like the awkward, like, would you like to be my girlfriend? And I'm like, yeah, I would like to be your girlfriend. Although I feel like we've been dating for months, but okay. So you get drafted in April. Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, he leaves out like big gaps. These are
a little spotty.
That's what we do.
That's what we do.
Oh my word.
Jump ahead.
All right. So I got drafted by the Colts in April. And then, so still kind of now we're long distance dating and Mallory's living in Manhattan. She ends up losing her job in private wealth management with the Wachovia and Wells merger. And so I'm like, hey, just come on out and come to Indianapolis. Maybe we can find you a job out here. So she ends up moving out to Indianapolis in September of 2009, not married, not engaged. And yeah, that's kind of where our journey begins.
How did that look for us?
We were just, you know, we just come from two totally different households where like the standard dinner table with my parents was like very quiet. There's very little conversation. We would eat our meal and that was it. Where in Mallory's house, conversation's so loud, like you just don't know who's talking to who, what's going on. Like for me, I'd be like a fish out of water, you know? So bringing those two worlds together, we did not really compromise on where we came from or kind of what our behaviors were or how we kind of lived our lives. So there was a lot of butting heads and Mallory would say, I'm just going to go back to New Jersey and leave. I'm like, okay, go. You know, at first I'm like, no, don't go. And then I'm like, she's just bluffing. You know,
I used to pack my bag up. I said like, so when I moved to Indy, Donald's like, don't worry, first round draft pick. I got it all. I'll give you a car, moving to my big home. And so I just brought like a bag of, my brother played ice hockey. So I packed up all the clothes I had in an ice hockey bag. And that's what I brought out to Indy. And so I used to pack that bag up like once a month. I would take all my clothes out of the closet. I'm like, I hate you. And like, I'm moving. He'd be like, fine. I'm like, what in the world? It was just, when I tell y'all, it was the most unhealthy, and Donald won't paint the, it was the most ridiculous relationship ever. Like we have three sons and God help them. If they ever walked into courtship with a girl like me, I'd be like, run fast. Like she's crazy. So Donald will never like paint my picture wholeheartedly, but I was just, I mean, you guys know this, but you're 23 and 22. You walk into a first round contract and you're like, figure it out. And I'm coming from a background of private wealth management. So I'm trying to like help him. I mean, it was just so convoluted and you have to grow up really fast. And that's really hard and scary. And we just, I mean, agents are great. And he had great agents, but I mean, we didn't have anybody shepherding us in a way that was awesome until.
But let me preface this, like faith wasn't an aspect of our lives whatsoever. I grew up in the Presbyterian church. And then once football started, I just totally stopped. We stopped going to church. I went to a Catholic high school because my public high school didn't have a football team. So I had to go to a Catholic high school. I'm like, I don't know anything about Catholicism. I'm a fish out of water when I went to mass. And so 2009 starts coming about and then I forget, like, again, the years are blurry for me, but I remember coming home. So the blessing was like getting drafted to the Indianapolis Colts was one of the biggest godsends for me. So right before I got there, Tony Dungy laid the foundation of a Christian-based team. And so Tony left right before I got there, but Jim Caldwell took over. And Jim coached with Tony for a great deal of time beforehand. And so that foundation remained the same. And so there were amazing guys in that locker room that would like, hey, just slowly guide me back towards to Christ. And Coach Caldwell, I mean, the team meetings, he would like lay scripture in the PowerPoints. Like that doesn't happen anywhere else, you know? And so just to be in that environment, like, because I could have been in, I don't know, Miami, LA, like, and it'd just be a nightmare. So really grateful for that. But I remember going to a Bible study one time. And again, I don't even know when these years are starting to blend together, but I went to a Bible study and I came home with a Bible And Mallory like persecuted me, just like laid into me, like, what are you doing with that? Like, why are you bringing this in the house? You know? And so that just really goes to show like where we were in right. our faith and how we were just totally living for the world in all areas of our life, just totally just trying to fill it with sports, money, house, cars, food, you name it. We tried to fill it and it just wasn't enough. And, so yeah, I mean,
So let's say it's 2010. One of Donald's former teammates, Dan Orlovsky, who's now on.
Well, we weren't teammates at the time, though.
Former teammates.
Yes. Yeah.
See, this happens till this day. Okay, former teammates, kind of at UConn, had signed a contract with Indy, and we had known
that was Dan. 2011. Dan lived with us.
I know, but I think this all started in, okay, regardless of the year, 2010-ish 11, Dan signed a contract sometime. I don't know when that happened. Dan and Donald and I and his wife Tiff had gone on a couple like fun vacations. They were with the same agent. Dan like probably, I think Dan, so Dan sold out for the Lord and probably saw us at one of our like gatherings with his agency. He was like, these jokers need the Lord quickly. So maybe that was on his heart. I actually should ask him that in clarity, but Dan gets signed by the Colts. His wife is on bed rest with triplets. She's this teeny little thing and cannot travel. So she had to be at UPenn Hospital, like closely watched. Donald says, okay, remember Dan? Like we've gone on vacation with him now and like, you know him well enough. What do you think if he lives with us? He's like, Tiff can't travel, his wife. And it would be silly for him for the season just to buy a house. And we had abundant space in our home in Indy. And I didn't think anything of it. And it's, I mean, it just, I said this to Dan recently. I said, had I known like how godly you were in the most like non-evasive way, I would have never let you enter our home. we would like have ragers all the time at our house. Like, I don't think I knew. I mean, I'm coming off of, I think like, it's so embarrassing. But like my goal, like when I drank was to like blackout. Like I never wanted to even like know what happened, which is ridiculous. So anyway, we invite Dan to live with us. And the cool thing is like he came into a home that was ridden with sin, like all the things that you could imagine, right? And he never once like raised a finger at us, like persecuted. He loved us in a way that was mind-blowing. And I've said to Dan, I'm like, I don't know if I could ever do what you did. Like come into a young couple's house, not partner with their sin, but not also, like I would have wanted to condemn the heck out of us. Be like, you fools, like you're going down every wrong path. And what did he do? He remained steadfast in his walk with the Lord. He would sit at our island every morning with his Bible open and coffee. And I'd walk past him going to the gym and he'd always say like, hey, Mal, like, any desire, I'm like, you're nuts. And I'd just walk right by him. And he would ask if he could pray before our meals. I mean, he gave us multiple opportunities to just kind of like know about Christianity in a way that was like kind and receptive. And when you roll the script out to where we are now, one thing I learned from him that I pray we model well is in order to draw people into the Lord, like a posture of zero judgment has got to be like leading the way, or else you will never win anyone for Christ if you come at them with a ruler and a Bible. There's no way. And it's just really cool because he lived with us in probably the ugliest season of our dating, courtship. We weren't married at that time. Mm-hmm. And he stuck by us. I mean, he modeled steadfast love in a way that I have never witnessed. And I always say, like, I said it recently to Dan and Jason on another like podcast thing. I said, if Dan never lived with us and you look at these moments, these like big moments in your life, I can totally say like we would be divorced. We probably would have never had kids and we would be so dark in our own lanes of misery and sin that, I mean, it's terrifying like to really think, had God not interceded kindly enough to lend us a former teammate from UConn to just like sift the waves in our household. So that's kind of, I would say, I mean, any other fun facts about.
No, was he that way in college, Donald?
I'm sorry?
Was Dan that way in college?
No, so.
No.
There's still no, no, Dan wasn't, but we also didn't cross paths. So right, but Dan left when I got there.
Right.
So we never crossed paths. So we knew each other just because of the UConn tie, But we didn't spend that much time together. So he would come back to UConn, train some off season, and I'd see him. But having the opportunity just to live under the same roof with him for a season. And I mean, he just taught me so much. And I mean, again, I was so immature in my faith, but like just showing like what's fasting. Like he would fast and he wouldn't say anything.
Did he
about
really?
It. Yeah. Like he wouldn't say anything about it, but like, hey, Mal's making this for dinner. Or, hey, what do you want for dinner? Mal wants to know she's going to cook. He's like, oh, I'm actually not eating tonight. I'm like, what? Or yeah, I'm like, what? What do you mean you're not eating tonight? He's like, I'm fasting. And then he would say like, he's fasting because his wife's pregnancy was super high risk. She's super tiny and she was having triplets. So it was a very high risk pregnancy, but like just to see like now looking back, like what he was contending for.
Right.
I mean, it's just, and just seeing that. Right. And it's like, there's something different about that guy. What is it? I want it. And so, yeah, he lived it.
And I guess bring our story home. Dan's thank you to us for living with us for a season. He was like, I'd love to send you to this conference. It's in Florida, this really nice hotel. Tiff and I will be there. Yes, this is truth.
I don't think so.
It is
true. I think it's a different
year. Well,
he did invite us to
PAO. He invited us to PAO. But he didn't really like, we didn't do much research. I remember, you know what's so sad? I looked at the hotel. I'm like, man, the hotel looks nice. I'm like, let's go.
Still do that, Valerie. That's not bad.
Right? The hotel only. And so anyway, we show up and night one, I'm like, what in the world? Hands are up. I'm like, get me out of here. Like worship music's blaring. I come from a Catholic background, you know, formally proper. And I'm like, I mean, more or less walk it out. I'm like, I can't do this. I felt like it was a total bait and switch. I'm like, that was not what was construed. And on the last day, you know, altar call, like, do you want to give your life to the Lord? To be very honest, I was like 50-50. Donald's like, I'm going to get baptized. I'm like, of course you are. You're so holy. And I'm like, well, fine. I'll get baptized with you. And I remember walking down the hallway with like a cover up on and at PAO, which was pretty cool. Like we didn't stay in the same room and we didn't break the rules. Like, cause we weren't married. So we stayed in separate rooms.
See, we weren't married at the time. It was a different year, but keep going.
Well, this is good. We're figuring things out. Anyway, so we weren't married. And you remember that, right?
We weren't married. I know that for a fact.
So we stayed in separate rooms.
Right.
I know and we didn't break the rules.
But it was in 2011, 2012.
Right, well, we'll figure all this right. out. We're taking anyway, too much podcast. So here we go. Anyway, I get baptized. And I remember being like, what am I doing? Like, I felt like such a hypocrite. I'm like, I didn't even want to do this. Like, I only did it to like partner with him. And I feel like that was kind of that was our marriage and life for so long. Like I did things to honor him, even though I wasn't buying in. And so what I think is cool is like, yes, we went to PAO. Yes, we get baptized. But then like God grabbed hold of me in a totally unique way. Same thing with him. And then we just started running horizontally and we would make intersections, you know, vertically with one another. So we just, our walks with the Lord now are so different. Like I'm a student of the Bible. I love the Bible. Like I have like crazy revelations and I'm in it and I want to talk to him about it. And he's like, that's not how I roll. Like he's a devotional guy and he reads the Bible, but it looks so different. But I think what's so sweet is like when we need to come together and we do frequently, it's so healthy and it's so God honoring. And we've just, when you look at where we began in 2008 and where we are now in 2020, I mean, it's mind blowing. Like only Jesus could have sanctified these sinners, truly. So I think it's really, I mean, it's in the grand scheme of things, we've gone through hell and back, truly. But you just are, when you can really recognize God's hand of grace and mercy on your life and thank the people that were maybe the ones who stood in the gap when you needed it most, it's cool to humbly submit and say, man, God, like you still fought for us, even though we were reckless abandons. So I would say that's kind of our story now in a nutshell, right?
Yeah.
Any other add-ins?
You know, and even like going to PAO, like putting a stake in the ground for the Lord, like I definitely was still a lukewarm Christian after, like I was on fire and then like a couple of weeks went by and I was kind of like lukewarm. And then really when it flipped for me, it's like, understanding that I'm about to be a father to our first son. And then he was born. It's like, wow, the unconditional love I feel for my son, like the minute he's out of the womb, it's like, well, that's how God felt about his son. And he put him on the cross. And then from there, I was like, all right, I'm all in. Mm-hmm. So that's our story. So we were in Indianapolis for 5 years. And then we were in San Diego for two. And then Yeah. So, I mean, it's really cool to see kind of as we look back across our career, you know, how God put certain people in our life to point them to him, and then also put us in certain situations to like help build us up to be leaders in certain spaces. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool just to see God's faithfulness in our journey.
I was going to ask you, tell me a little bit about the Indianapolis culture. I'm fascinated the difference. You know, you played with three or four teams.
Yeah.
What was the difference in how they cultivated that kind of, you know, locker room? Were they seeking out Christian players, or how did they make that work?
You know, that's a great question. I really don't know. It's something that is talked about. But they would bring guys in that fit the culture, right? Because culture is so key in a locker room. You know, and it was never, again, it was never, because not everybody on the team was a believer, but it was never a condemning or like, hey, this is the way it needs to be. It was just kind of like, hey, this is what we believe. This is what I believe in. And we're going to love each other and, you know, play hard on Sunday. Right. And so it was, but again, like I was naive because that was the first team of my like career. So I didn't know any different, but now, you know, being in Indianapolis, being in San Diego, being in New England, like, and then hearing other guys' stories from other teams, like no other teams or coaches did that, right? Like that's truly an anomaly and truly a gift to be a part of something like that. But it was cool. I mean, just because you'd see the coaches living it out, like you'd see them like, or super early in the morning, walking around with their Bibles, coming from a coach's study, things like that. Like when you see your coaches doing it too, and then living it out and truly like, and they treated you differently. Like they truly treated you as a man, like as an individual, not just a player, but like as a man. And you want to, and that's, you go to bat for people who treat you as a person and not a commodity.
Yeah, because that's rare in professional sports to not be treated as a commodity for sure. That's hard.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
That's cool.
I mean, Matt and I've talked about that a lot. We talked about this a little bit before we hit record, but I think one thing as like our role, Mallory, that's similar is we have to support these guys when during their careers, when performance is such a reality for them and their identity can be tied around performance. And I don't know, Matt, I would love for you guys to talk about
that. Well, I like we talked about, I guess for me, like the, you know, as pro athletes, like you're talking about the selfishness that you feel as a couple, like for me until our marriage, I feel like our marriage really took off, I guess, when you start to put your partner ahead of yourself. And as athletes, you're kind of served and you're told, you know, everybody, it's all about you and your work ethic. And once you get to the major leagues, you got to stay in the major leagues and I guess, is that kind of the mentality, like the kind of the same thing for football where you're so wrapped up in being a pro athlete and being, you know, the man that sometimes I guess when it doesn't go your way, your identity is tied up into that and you feel like that's who you are. And like even in retirement, like both of us are retired now. Like trying to figure out like, you know, that part of you is almost gone. And so I just would, is that kind of a similar experience in football as it is in baseball?
Yes, very, very much so. And, you know, especially early on in my career, like everything was tied to football, like the way I thought about myself, my self-worth, my values, my identity, like it was just wrapped in football. And then over the course of my 7-year career,
that was really good for our relationship, by the way, just insert that truth.
It was good for all relationships.
Really healthy.
And then again, about halfway through, you know, I kind of had a come to Jesus moment, like, you know, like the most important things that like I remember now, like I don't remember, you know, certain games or scores, things like that. But I remember like the relationships, right? I remember the locker room. I remember the plane rides, you know, those things. And so that's like really where God shifted my heart, but it was still a struggle. I remember even this was probably year six or seven. Yeah. It was towards the end of my career. I remember having like a bad game in San Diego and like, I didn't even want to go out. And it was the next day we had the day off or something. And I didn't even want to go out to go pick up food because I was like that embarrassed. Like, oh, what if they recognize, you know? So like it really like messed with me emotionally. So it was still a struggle throughout my career, but towards the end I had a little bit better of a handle of it by God's grace. But I think, you know, tying it into as a couple, you know, again, we come from two different backgrounds, two different households. We operate two totally different ways. And me as a football player and who I was, like, I always had the mentality, like, I'm going to do things my way, going to brew my way through it. And that's kind of how I handled our relationship. It was like, if you want to talk, but I don't want to talk, I'm not going to talk back, right? Like, I'm going to do what I want to do. And I realized, like, that's not getting us anywhere. And it's actually driving us into the ground. So, you know, I was like, I need to start, you know, serving my wife and laying down my conveniences, my selfish ways, and really, like, loving her well. What does it look like to love her well? Well, that means I've got to die to myself and do things that I definitely don't want to do. But to love her well, you know, I need to know her love languages, what makes her fire, and make sure I'm compromising.
Hmm. That's awesome. We have so much in common. Like, it's pretty much the same thing. This is great. Okay, Mallory, I love your leadership style. I mean, actually, you're the reason that we did this podcast to begin with. And so I'm just curious, the things that you picked up from other Christian women, and I'm just, was there any other Christian woman that modeled Christ well before you decided to follow Christ? And then what have you taken from other women that you want to apply in your leadership style and your relationships with younger gals and all of that stuff?
Yeah. So the person who shifted made me buy all in was meeting Sarah Hasselbeck. I met her when we played in Indy. It was her last season there. And she was like super, like, she's one of those people, and she doesn't care when I say this, but like, she was so intimidating. And I'm like, wow, like, there's something on her. And I don't know if she hates me or likes me, but I'm going to try and be her friend. Like, and that sounds so weird and kind of like pseudo stalkerish, but I'm like, I like her. Like, and I don't think she likes me, but I'm going to try and figure my way out to like weasel my way into her life. And honestly, it came from, she would sit in at Bible study and she didn't say much, but when she spoke, it was like mic drop every time. And I'm like, golly, like, as a wife, as a mom, like, what are you doing? And so seeing Jesus personified in her was like, all right, like, we're both blonde. She's a lot fitter than me. Like, I can get there. Like, these are my goals in like 5 years. Right. So meeting her, and what's cool about Sarah, like, she knows the Bible well, but she doesn't feel the desire to like share that always. She's just a queen of application and authenticity. And she lives out the book of James, and she lives out the book of Job, and she lives out the book of Hebrews. Like, she lives it in a way that I feel like she speaks scripture without quoting the verses. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And it was really cool and very enticing for me. So she was my person that just like, finally, like, and I think we all need that. Like, sometimes the Bible's cool, right? Jesus is awesome, but you're like, I need a tangible to buy in. And she was my buy-in in the most innocent way. So Sarah, and to this day, like, we've got a great friendship. She's one of my go-tos. And I just, man, everything about her, she still sets a standard of excellence that's attainable in all things, which is cool. But I would say for people that like modeling their style of leadership, I actually love male pastors' teaching styles. So I love listening to, Matt Chandler, I listen to everything he's ever put out there. I'm a big junkie for David Platt. And I think what's cool is like, you will listen to other people. And I think it's a compliment when you compliment them, or you act like them, or you talk like them. And if you're going after people that are theologically sound and gleaning from them, kudos to you. Who cares if you take their little things and you make it has like a Mallory spin on it. But I think what's helped in my leadership style and like teaching is two things. Like, I don't care anymore. I literally don't care. I'm like, here's the deal. Like, I love Jesus. You're going to hear it somehow in our conversation, not in a way that's convicting or like harsh, but like, this is what I stand for on all principles. So I would say a spirit of boldness has helped in the style of leadership, and then one of relatability. I will roll out our life story to you. I'll put all my cards on the table and say, this is the highs and lows. These are the low lows. And I make sure the lows are always seen first. So they're not like, who is this pompous, like, Christian that like is trying to like draw me in. I'm like, yo, I was a major sinner. Like I have done it all and then some. I always say to like younger girls, I'm like, if I wrote my life on a whiteboard, you would not want me teaching you about the Bible at all. So, and I ask, and I don't always like tell them my whole sin struggles because they'd be like, wow, you really shouldn't be teaching the Bible right now. But I think if I leave it at them for their feet, I'm like, if you want to ask about anything, like ask me. And sometimes I know most women don't want to go there, but in certain seasons, I'm like, I'm going to go there right now because I can sense you need to hear this from my personal struggles. So, I think just listening to really sound doctrine is essential to teaching and leading well. And then, yeah, just being totally transparent, like in a way that like doesn't exemplify perfection, but there's something enticing about, man, she's authentic. And like, I know she's can accept her wrongs, but she like celebrates the winning moments. And like, there's always a deflection upward. It's not to self. So I don't know if that kind of helps answer, but I think it's easy to get overwhelmed with there's so much out there to take, right? But I think just find your people. Like I would say glean from one to three styles, like pastors or like teachers, and kind of stay consistent in your approach. Cause sometimes if you listen to all, you'll be just like this. I think you could have a confusing style of teaching. So pick 2 to 3 people that you really like and feel challenged by, and then just study them, everything about them. And then over time you will organically emulate what they're doing or saying, but again, with your own unique spin on it, if that makes sense.
I was going to ask you guys too. I was thinking about it as you were talking. So who went first with following Christ, or was it a dual?
That's a good question.
It was a dual. Mm. You can give your, so I'd say it was a dual, but I feel like there are seasons where one person was running harder than the other.
Yeah.
Mallory definitely outran me.
That's not what I was getting at. That's not what I was getting at. I was going to give you the credit.
But you know, I want to live my life.
Oh, so nice. See?
Debatable. But now it's, yeah. So, but now we've come to a place like I truly believe like we're equally yoked in this thing. And, cause we need to be. I mean, otherwise our marriage is going to struggle. Our parenting is going to struggle. So.
For sure. That's good. Good.
That's awesome. And you guys have 3 of the cutest little boys I've ever seen. Their hair is amazing.
Oh, their hair is awesome.
Oh, I love it so much.
Totally. I think what's cool, I feel like for us, like the biggest, we were just on a James Bible study. And I think the best thing we can ever do as like Christians individually, as a married couple and with our kids, is just like continually redefine like the world's perspective of blessing or suffering, or just, I think we have such a unique position, even now in the retired layer of life, like just to constantly like look different. It's got to look different. Like we live in a very opulent area, right? Where like Bentleys are like a normal car, as are, you know, all these things. And I'm like, man, we have to be so equally yoked with like decision-making and what we're personifying that is authentic. It's not fake, but we just have to, in the early years of the NFL, we like just did anything we wanted. And it's so interesting now, like you just have to create healthy restraints on as individuals and in our marriage and in our parenting styles, so that there's an enticing layer of like, man, they run differently and they're running hard after something maybe we want to know. So I think it's all this stuff that we went through in his career. And now we both work in ministry, which is beyond comical at times. I'm like, you took again 2 people that like couldn't have been further from you to go hard after like kingdom work, which is really cool. But because we went through like the muck and the mire to get us to a place of like, again, leveraging our past to just draw people in here. And I feel like that works even now, like in our retirement life and where we live, it's fun to just put God on display continually in a way that just is real, you know? I don't even know where that came from, but maybe I just spirit led. Sorry guys. That just came out of nowhere.
That was good. I like that.
Sure. Thanks.
What, Donald, if you had to talk to, or I'm sure you do, like younger guys breaking into the league, what are the some advice, like say some young minor league or, you know, first year, second year major league players or minor league, you know, first year football players, what is your couple things that you tell them that helps them, or what you would say to a young Donald Brown?
That's a great question.
Younger,
That's a great question. You know, I think the first thing that comes to mind is, you know, it's just a game. You know, it's just a game. And I love competition. But at the end of the day, it's just a game. And so to enjoy it, don't take yourself too seriously, because I think that I know that's what I did. I took myself way too seriously and it just robbed me of my joy. And I was worried about the wrong things. You know, I was worried about, you know, Sundays and, you know, all these things. And it's like, and sometimes I would just put my head down, focus on, all right, I need to get this film study in, get in this ice bath, get this PT, get in this weight room. And I would just totally miss an opportunity to spend time with guys in the locker room, you know, at the lunch table, things like that, you know? So I think my priorities were so performance driven that I lost sight of the relationships at times across my career. And I'm bummed for that, because now, like, that's all you have the relationships. That's all you have. So I didn't always do the best job stewarding the time for relationships.
That's funny. I've actually said the same thing. Like, I didn't have enough fun. Like, I didn't enjoy it enough because I was so worried about the next thing. Like, even the good times, I didn't enjoy them because it was more of a relief because I was worried about the next at bat or the next play. So that's interesting. I've said the same thing. The relationship part of it is the thing that you miss and that you enjoyed the most in pro sports is those laughs, those times, those bus rides, those flights, those that's the stuff. I think when you talk to people about pro sports and they, you won a World Series, what's that like? I'm like, well, the ring is cool, but it's in my bedroom. I've never worn it. Like, the stories and the laughs and the relationship part of it, accomplishing something as a group, that's the thing that was so cool and the things that you remember. So it sounds like an answer that I've given before myself.
That's awesome. I love that we have so much in common. We'll have dinner.
Yes.
I can't imagine.
Come to San Diego. Come here.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. I know that you're probably exhausted. You've got three little kids to chase after. So
he's emotionally taxed now. Introverts.
The introvert.
Oh, yeah. This was a lot of time.
Yeah, he's like, he's going to be spent.
Same thing. It's a lot to ask for me to do a podcast. I'm like, I don't really like talking that much.
But he's doing great. He's doing great.
So
great.
You guys are awesome. This is such an amazing conversation and so easy to have, you know, just talking life, and that's what it's all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's cool, man. I'm really happy we got to have this, and we really appreciate you guys coming on. I know I'm trying to keep these to like 45 minutes. We could talk to you guys all night, but I guess that's it. We appreciate you guys coming on. So
proud of you guys. It's so good. I think again, like, you're telling stories that need to be heard, and just keep doing it. Charge after it hard. It's worth it.
Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having
Bye,
us.
Guys.
See you.
Bye.